Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Bite-Sized Blessings podcast. I need to apologize because I was not able to release an episode this past weekend. I'm fighting some sort of stomach flu, and I absolutely was not able to pull myself together enough to put an episode out there. But here I am, and I'm going to have a couple extra episodes this week to more than make up for it. But I know you've already forgiven me, and so with that, let's move on to meeting my guest for this episode, Catherine Giovanni. And as with all humans, Catherine is amazingly complex. She's not only a forgiveness coach, and we do talk about that quite a bit in this episode, she's also a best-selling author, a speaker, and an advisor. But the cool thing is, and we get into this a little bit later in the episode, she's also all about unleashing the power of your intuition in your everyday life. And, you know, she's a lot like me. She kept her own intuitive gifts hidden for years. And, you know, that's because a lot of people in the larger world, well, they don't really believe in this kind of thing, or they don't believe in these kind of supra-normal events that have happened to some of us in our lives. And so she kept herself hidden. She kept herself small until one day she just realized that she had to let everyone know that intuition is real, that we each have it, and we can each cultivate it to help us navigate the world with a little more success. Catherine is so interesting and such a trailblazer. I really thoroughly enjoyed my conversation with her, and she made me laugh. And I love that. I love people who make me laugh. So now, without further ado, here's my conversation with Catherine Giovanni.
I chose a friend of mine that I went to school with, and we were estranged, and I hadn't heard from her in like 30 years. True story. And I thought, I couldn't even remember. It was like grammar school, and I couldn't even remember what the fight was about. And I thought, I can forgive this person because I can. So I sat in the middle of my bed, and I imagined that my friend was in front of me the way I remembered her decades before. And I had a little chat with her because you're all alone. You know, my method, you don't have to reach out to people and let them know what you're doing. Forgiveness in my world is selfish and personal.
Who are you as a human being? If you had to go and introduce yourself to a group, or even at a party, you're meeting someone and you're introducing yourself, how would you do that?
Usually I just tell people I'm a forgiveness coach and I'm an author. That's usually what I've written, 12 books. You know, I could go on and on. I've had a very long career. I retired from the concierge industry, but usually I just introduce myself as a writer and author, forgiveness coach. And sometimes I just say I try and leave people better than I find them. That's kind of my mantra.
I love that. That's really beautiful. That's the first time anyone has used that phrase. So thank you. I'm so intrigued. You know, they do say, science has shown that when we're children, sometimes the play that we engage in is a sign for later in life, kind of the vocation that we're going to take up. And so this concierge industry component or part of you, this piece, did you see it when you were a child, or did you engage in play as a child that would have led you to this vocation?
Nobody's ever asked me that before. I've been a peacemaker all my life. I come from a volatile background filled with alcoholism, tried to commit suicide in the eighth grade. I mean, got bullied, the whole thing. And I was always the peacemaker in the family. I was always the one who was trying to get peace from each side, so to speak. And my writing ability, that always pulled me out of the drink in college and high school and grammar school, because I've always been able to write. So the essay portion of every test, I always pulled it off. it was the rest of the test that maybe I not didn't do so well, but I always pulled out the essay. It's really how I got through college.
And I don't know, I feel like a lot of people might not know what a concierge is. So would you mind just kind of explaining what that entails?
A concierge, you've heard of the concierge in a hotel, everybody that's been around for decades. The independent concierge was started by a core group of people about, never mind how many years ago, let's just say a couple decades. That sounds less painful. And back in those days, and the late 90s, there were maybe a few hotel concierge who said, if I can do this in the hotel world, I bet I can bring it to mainstream America. And they did quite successfully. I was among those first 20 concierge. And eventually, you know, there were just these 20 independent people who literally could take your to-do list and go do it. And it didn't matter what was on the to-do list. They were your new personal assistant, but they were an affordable personal assistant. They're still around today, very similar to a concierge doctor. And they'll take everything. So, you know, the personal assistants are not just relegated for the rich people. Normal people can do this. And now they've been around for number of decades, and they're probably all over the country. They're all over the world now. And the only reason they credit me with being one of the founders of that industry is because I started an association. Back then, I just saw 20 independent companies doing their own thing. And I thought, well, let's corral them together and let's start an association so we can see if we can, you know, actually create an industry. And I did. And I retired from that industry in 2020.
Wow.
It was time.
It was time. Yeah. Wow. Amazing. I had no idea that this group existed. And I think that's utterly, what foresight, you know, they kind of almost, I would say, predicted what's going on now with, you know, DoorDash with.
Exactly. This was the precursor to DoorDash. The difference between a concierge and DoorDash or Uber Eats is vetting. You're getting no disrespect to, please don't email me, DoorDash. I love you and have used you myself. So don't shoot me nasty notes. But DoorDash, it's different from DoorDash because you're getting a different level of person who has been vetted. Their references have been, you know, that kind of thing. So you're getting kind of a four or five star personal assistant as opposed to somebody you don't know showing up at your door.
So I sometimes ask this question when I find out about people's occupations and I find them very intriguing, which I find this very intriguing, but do you have a favorite memory from your time doing that job?
I have. The reason I get out of bed in the morning is because I like to turn people's lights on. And I really, really enjoy watching people become a success. I've been teaching people how to start a concierge business for over 20 years, and there's nothing that brings me more joy than to see them make that six-figure income or to see them finally be able to do what they were supposed to do. And that's why I do what I do. That's why I've written so many books. It brings me joy to turn people's lights on. So I don't really have one memory in particular. I enjoy helping people and then watching them succeed.
Yeah. And I think that is actually a rare trait. I think there's a lot of people in this world that feel like they won't lift others up until they feel like they've conquered the universe or the world. And so it's a really generous, operating from this really gorgeous, generous place. So thank you. We need more.
Oh, honey, I've lifted people up when I was in the basement. I'm a cancer survivor. I mean, I have lifted people up when I was on the ground myself, because at the end of the day, that's how you get up off the ground yourself. Now, I didn't tell anybody at the time, you know, I'm pretty good at keeping those things to myself, but you know, the true test is if you can lift yourself up before you've been lifted up.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I would love to hear the story of how you transitioned from that work to what you're doing now. How did that happen?
Oh, that was easy. In 1990, the flashpoint to my entire life was when my mother died in 1990. And I got sober that year. I've been sober for 34 years. So there's a lot of stuff. Thank you. There's a lot of stuff back there. Needless to say, you can all connect the dots. But when she died, we had three really great years together because she got sober and we became really close, and then she died. So I kind of spent a little time licking my wounds and feeling sorry for myself. And then I realized that if I didn't pick up my life, I was probably going to die like she did. So I kind of got my, you know what, together. And when you quit drinking, most people, not everybody, but most people go through AA, and you have to do the steps and you have to go reach out to people and you have to make amends. Okay. I'm kind of shy. Always been shy, and now I'm an extroverted introvert, so I can turn it on and off when I want to. But back then, there was no extrovert in me, not even a little, and I had no desire to reach out to anybody. Thank you very much. So, but I did. I paid it lip service, and I kind of started, you know, apologizing to people, and I started forgiveness. And I started to forgive people who I was angry at. But, you know, everybody tells you you need to forgive. Nobody teaches you how. And what if you don't want to forgive? What do you do then? What if it's unforgivable? So back in those days in the 90s, I was starting to teach concierge workshops. They were two-day gigs, teaching people how to do that. And I am a customer service trainer because that's part of the job, right? So I can teach you beautiful words to say. I can teach you how to dress. I can teach you how to talk. I can teach you body language. I can teach you 2 days worth of stuff, but none of it's going to matter a lick if you're angry inside, because your anger is going to bleed through your body language, whether you want it to or not. So I had to come up with a way to teach people to lose their anger when they couldn't leave their station at work. But back then, this was the 1990s. This is 20 plus years ago. You didn't bring a soft topic to workshops. It wasn't done. Nobody did it. Okay, because I'm crazy and I'm got a pretty high tolerance to pain. I did, because it just seemed to me that was the way it worked. And it took another 15 years before my two business partners and I figured out the secret sauce to forgiveness. And I wrote the book about it.
Yeah, it's sometimes it's really interesting meeting new people and having conversations with them. And I feel like if you can have an open conversation with them and really be vulnerable with them, even in the first or second meetings, you know, as you're developing your friendship, you very quickly discover kind of what their hungry ghosts are, or what's been feeding on them, and what they're haunted by. And a lot of times it's an event or an occasion or a memory, and they can't quite move past it. They can't, you know, find their way through it. Or maybe, you know, I think some people are just addicted. They like being in that place because it justifies a lot of things in their lives.
Their hate fuels their fire. You know, the hate, I am a survivor of this horrible thing. Look at me. And you speak about it and you talk about it. My hatred of this is what gets me out of bed in the morning. Okay. That's fair. I'm sure it is. I'm sure it does fuel your fire. I get it. I did it for myself for years. But here's the thing. Love will get you farther faster. Love will make you more money, get you thinner, faster. Anything that you want for your life, a relationship, you want to lose weight, you want money, whatever it is. Love and forgiveness will get you there faster. Hate might get you there, but if you want to take that slow, if you want to take that slow sloth trail, go for it. But I prefer the fast lane because, you know, life is short. You know, the thing with forgiveness is everybody listening, you're all thinking of the same thing, including you, my friend. Everybody, 10 out of 10 people on a 10 scale, with 10 being unforgivable dumpster fire and one being super easy to forgive, you're thinking of your number 10. You're thinking of the person that hurts you the most. You're thinking of that unforgivable person that may not even be appropriate for you to forgive. I'm the only one on the planet that's going to tell you first, you don't have to forgive the unforgivable if you don't want to. You don't have to forgive them. I can say that twice. You don't have to forgive them. Forgiveness is very personal and very private. And Why do I say you don't have to forgive your number 10 unforgivable people? Because there's so many people, places, and things. I did say places and things. Stay with me. That you can forgive before you even get to that dumpster fire. Now, a few things, because then everybody asked me this question. Just because I forgive you doesn't mean I want a relationship with you. I probably don't. Just because I forgive you doesn't mean you were right. It doesn't mean I'm giving you a pass. It doesn't mean all of a sudden, okay, you were right, I was wrong. Absolutely, 100% not. You're still wrong. I still don't want a relationship with you. Forgiveness, the formal definition for me, means I want you out of my head. I want to stop thinking about you. I want to stop the memories from coming. I want to live my life. That's what it means. And what I'm going for is everybody will say forgive and forget. Okay. There might be a magical human being unicorn on the planet that can forget these things. I'm from New York City originally. I am not your girl. I will not forget. But what I can promise you is when you go back to that memory after using my system, there won't be an emotional charge attached to it anymore. You can look at that memory and you won't care. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for neutrality. I'm looking to get that emotional charge out so you can live your life.
Yes, and you can move forward with a little more lightness in your step.
That's right. You won't be stuck anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my second question always is, did you grow up in a religious household? And what did that look like? And has it changed over the years, kind of your feeling about the news?
My family has mostly passed away, but no, we grew up Episcopalian and we were good Episcopalians. I went church to church twice a year, Christmas and Easter. There you go. Mostly every, and you know, Episcopalians are horrible singers. Don't deny it. They are. They kind of, I went to a Baptist church and everybody was singing and they were all happy. And I was like, wow, my church doesn't sound like this. It was kind of nice. No, we were not religious by any means, but I had a nanny who was really, really, really intuitive. And she's the one that saved my life. She got me out of the house when my parents were fighting and drinking and doing all the stuff that that comes with. And she's the one who told me that there was more to life than what I was being told. So she's really the reason I am who I am today.
I love that because children are just little sponges. Mm-hmm. And what I really appreciate about that story is that, you know, in the midst of this conflict and this stress and this fear, because I would imagine there was fear, that you had this person, this rock, who told you, I don't know what kind of intuition she used or what that looked like, but she was there to tell you essentially that everything was going to be okay. Am I understanding correctly?
Yeah. She got me out to Central Park on a regular basis. We spent a great deal of time in that park. And she was she was very intuitive. You will never hear me say the word psychic ever because I hate the word. I think when you think of a psychic, no disrespect to anybody who uses a worm, but most people think of a grifter and a con. I'm going to take your money. I don't believe you. The difference between psychic and intuitive is intuitive. Everybody on the planet is intuitive, including you. Everybody's intuitive. It's not just special people. I just happened to be born with it and recognized it as an early age, but everybody's intuitive. And Grandma Tori, she was intuitive. She predicted death. She saw things. She saw things out of the corner of her eye. She was very religious, but she was very, very intuitive. And I knew she wouldn't lie to me. I was a kid.
Right. Well, you know, what has come up over and over again in my interviews with people is that many times in families or just, you know, even in groups or clusters of people, someone who has that, you know, that intuition, that gift, who can, you know, predict deaths or what have you, it's a shameful family secret and nobody can talk about it. You know, there are whispers, people whisper about it, but it's, I don't know, everybody grows up with a different family unit, constellation, stories, culture, all of it. And
sort of.
Yeah,
my mother used to say every family is the same, only the names are different. We all have that one relative at Thanksgiving that nobody wants to sit next to, and we all probably have family secrets that nobody wants to talk about. I mean, it's different places and different cultures and different religions, but at the end of the day, it's the same kind of dynamic.
Well, I'm so grateful that you had this person in your life who, because as children, you know, I had a pretty insane and stressful and difficult childhood as well. And I didn't have that person. So I was the oldest and I was navigating alone without any sort of consolation like that. Because in my mind, I hear your story and what a huge gift for you. You know, huge gift. But not only that, as children, you know, I feel like we're more easily able to live in the imaginal world, the world of the imagination and hope mm-hmm. and magic and all of that stuff. And here you are with this adult who is telling you, no, it's real. And what another huge gift for you. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, I used to hear voices in my head. When I was a kid, I used to talk to myself and I used to answer myself. And I just thought it was me talking to me. So imagine my surprise when I realized it's not just me talking to me. I was actually hearing things and predicting things. And so because it was the 1970s, I really am that old. Because it was the 1970s and because of, you know, the family I grew up in, I knew if I said anything, the bullies would bully me even worse. And they'd probably lock me up and give me meds and send me to a psych ward because if you hear voices, you're crazy and you need a straitjacket. So I didn't tell anybody until I got married to my husband in 1992. And I spent my entire adult time not telling anybody that I actually was really intuitive. And I used to give people readings without them knowing it because I get messages for people, whether I want to or not, they just kind of come through from the angels. And I got very, very, very good. I still do it to this day of masking it. I used to do something. I used to say, have you ever thought of ... You know what you should probably think about? Here's you know, some unsolicited advice. You know, I really think this will work for you, ... And when I came and when it was a really close thing, they said, how could you possibly know that? I'd say, well, experience, you know, just a gut feeling. It wasn't a gut feeling. I heard it or I saw it or I sensed it. Walked into a room and it just feels wrong. You don't know why. Or can you imagine your childhood bedroom in your mind right now? Can you see the walls?
Yes.
Can you see the bed?
Yes.
That's clairvoyance. You're clairvoyant. Now, this does not mean it's a Stephen King, you're about to see a bad ghostie. Okay. This is not The Exorcist. No. What clairvoyant, and everybody thinks that. They get scared. Don't be scared. It just means that your gift is the gift of sight. You see the answer. You see the answer in a movie. You see it in a book. You see it, you know, you might be watching a podcast on YouTube and you're watching the guest and they do something and you see it, you notice it, you pay attention. That's what clairvoyance is. I'm clairaudient. I'm actually three of them, but my main gift is clairaudience. So I actually hear things and everybody on the planet can do this. Everybody has one of those gifts.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of paying attention and not listening to people when they call you crazy, because if soon as you start showing a smidgen of intuition, society smacks that you're crazy as a bedbug sticker on your forehead. Imagine if you went into a Fortune 500 company and you allowed all those beautiful souls to be themselves, to be their authentic self, to show their natural intuition. Can you imagine how far that company could go?
Yeah, what I love about what you're saying is that you're encouraging people to open up to the mystery and also to more authentically embody themselves in this world.
And you're not also, crazy. You're not crazy. When you were a little girl or a little boy, to anybody listening, and you had that imaginary friend and your family said you're crazy, they're not there. They were there. You knew they were there. You're not crazy. They were actually there. You've just been socialized to believe that only special people can do this. I'll talk to God for you. I'll talk to the other side for you. I mean, yeah. I mean, I want to, I could so stretch your brain if you really wanted me to and scare everybody away from this broadcast.
I mean, I'm also for that.
I'm also a past life specialist and a medium. So, and it's just because over the years, I've just kind of learned how to do this. And one of the reasons I'm so into forgiveness is because anybody listening to this broadcast, please hop over to YouTube and watch this. And if you can't, I'm about to hold an opaque coffee cup right in front of my face, okay, for anybody listening. Let's say this coffee cup is anger and bitterness, and it's your childhood, and it's all the nasty stuff. Well, for the moment, look at my body language. I'm holding it off to the side, right? It's very easy to do. I can still have a look at my body language. We can have a conversation. We can go out to dinner. We can go see a movie. I can go to work. I can get out of bed in the morning. But now look, the longer I hold on to this, now I'm using both hands. Now look at my body language. It's starting to interfere in my life. It's starting to become painful. And the more I hold on to this, the more it's going to interfere with my life. Now I'm holding the coffee cup right in front of my face. Now look at my body language. Both my hands are engaged. And I can't see you. And I can't see the opportunities because all I can think about is the anger of my childhood. All I can talk about it. It's everything to me. It's become my thing. So to put the cup down, you forgive. And once you can forgive, you're going to start to pay attention. You're going to start to notice things. Your intuition, which had been blocked by anger, is finally going to be able to come through. You're going to notice a new job opportunity. You're going to notice a new way to lose weight. You're going to notice other things. More money will flow. Why? Because you've put the anger down and you can now pay attention.
Thank you for that. And it takes me back to, you know, some of what you've revealed already in this conversation. You're obviously you were a sensitive child. In this environment that was very challenging and heartbreaking. You right. have a nanny who is there though to kind of help you to weather all the various storms that you're going through. Thank goodness your nanny was there. But you know what? Life does not get easier as we get older. We have assorted various challenges. And at some point, I'm going to assume the nanny was no longer there. And you had to weather those storms yourself.
This is true.
So, yeah. And so what I think is especially powerful, because I certainly was bullied as well when I was young, when I was younger. And sometimes I feel like kids don't even know they're doing it. It's just this way to pass the time or have fun or make themselves feel better. I'm not even sure about that. But I do know that there are things in my past from my childhood that I absolutely need to forgive around other kids.
Yeah.
How did you do that? Did you get in touch with your child self or how did that work?
Here's the piece of my forgiveness process that nobody knows about. Okay. And I have a whole chapter on science for everybody who's a naysayer out there. I got science to back me up. Okay. What I really want is I want you to sit down and I want you to write a list of people and a few places and things. And I am going to explain that. And I want you to number them from 1 to 10, 10 being horrific. Right. And you could have 5 fives and 3 threes. I don't care. Whatever you want to do. And then I want you to start with the number ones and then work your way up to the tens. And my mantra is very simple. I'm a simple soul. You don't have to sing anything. You don't have to burn any incense unless you want to. You don't have to dance on one leg unless you want to. If you want to hold a crystal, be my guest. I don't, but if you want to, go for it. And it's a very simple process of putting your hand in your heart and saying, I forgive you, which is easy to do for the ones, twos, and threes. The ones, the person who cut you off in the grocery store yesterday on aisle 5, the person who cheated on your notepaper when you were a kid. Easy people. The person at the gas station this morning who I wished have a nice day. And she said, yeah, the chance of that happening is probably nil. And I looked at her and I got into my car and I forgave her right there using my own mantra. Now, what's the difference? When you forgive the person and you forgive the energy around the person, the reason people don't stay forgiven is because you didn't forgive the energy. And what am I talking about? Einstein proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that everything in the world has energy, but it can't be created nor destroyed. It just transforms into something else. So your that anger energy, when you get angry, you think it leaves your mouth and it dissipates into the universe. It does not. I wish it did. It hangs around your energy field. But not only that, your past, here's a little bit more brain stretching. You've been a guy, you've been a girl, you've had hundreds of lives. And when you get angry and something really traumatic and really horrible happens, you can bring that energy into this lifetime and it will stay with you and trip you up until you forgive it. Which is why people are scared of heights, because they probably got thrown off a cliff in a past life. See, when somebody does a private session with me, the life that's tripping them up the most is usually the one that comes through, and then I'll have them forgive everybody in that lifetime. So let's talk about your number 10s. Why do I call it a dumpster fire? Okay. Let's say it's an unforgivable act. I don't even think we need to establish what that act is. Everybody's different. Whatever you think is unforgivable. Maybe you can't forgive the person. Okay, that's fair. Let's forgive the other things in the memory. Let's forgive the bed, the table, the chair, the building. If you were bullied, let's forgive your desk, the building, the school, the playground, and the energy around the school and the energy around the playground. And that's gonna take your anger down from a 10 maybe to a 9. And the energy part, you're forgiving the energy around things, that's going to transmute it. So it's not going to haunt you as much anymore. Forgiving the energy is really the key to the whole process. And that's what everybody doesn't know. Now, a few things, if you start to forgive, you might lose some people. Happens. I did. And why are you going to lose people? Because you're turning into somebody else they don't recognize and they want that angry person back because you make them feel better because you're angrier than they are. So they like to be in misery. So misery loves company, doesn't it? So, you know, you might lose friends. You might lose some family members. And if you're losing those family members, maybe you should lose those family members. They might be toxic and narcissistic. And maybe it's a good thing that they walk out the door. But stand tall because new people will come in. Here's a very funny story for you. It's true. I was eating in kind of like a bed and breakfast kind of thing with some intuitive friends of mine. And the waitress came over, took their order, came to me, took two giant steps backwards. And the concierge in me kicked in. So I very politely gave my order and she wrote it down and she ran back to the kitchen. Didn't walk. She ran and I was paying attention and I noticed it. I thought it was a little odd. So when she came back with our plates of food, she very politely put everybody's plate of food in front of them. Me, she stood on the other side of the table and threw my food at me like a frisbee and then ran back to the kitchen. I fully expected her to come back and sprinkle me with holy water. She did not. However, my friend leaned over and said, "She's scared of your energy." So while my energy might attract certain people, it's also going to repel people because they're going to be scared of it because it feels off to them. It's kind of why kids get bullied. People get divorced. Your energy doesn't match the other person's energy. It's called vibration. Einstein talked about that too. And if you're vibrating at a different rate than somebody else, you're going to irritate each other. So I can be in the grocery store and the aisle is empty and all of a sudden everybody's in the aisle with me. I don't take it personally. I often want to send the company a bill for my services. Say, I brought all those people in. You're welcome. But the opposite can happen. People take a giant step backwards from me because they're scared. I never take it personally because I know it's my energy that they're actually scared of. I am tempted to look at them and go, boo, but I never do. Really tempting.
Is I would love for you to share a story or stories. It can be more than one where you feel like you've witnessed or experienced something magical or miraculous in your life, maybe something mysterious. I'd love to hear whatever you'd like to share.
When I came up with this process, I I can't say that. I usually say drink my own Kool-Aid, but that's such a horrible reference. I do my own stuff, shall we say. I've really got to stop saying that. It's a horrible reference. And do not Google it if you want to know what that means. Please don't. It's horrible. Now everybody's going to Google it. I chose a friend of mine that I went to school with, and we were estranged, and I hadn't heard from her in like 30 years. True story. And I thought, I couldn't even remember. It was like grammar school. And I couldn't even remember what the fight was about. And I thought, I can forgive this person because I can. So I sat in the middle of my bed and I imagined that my friend was in front of me the way I remembered her decades before. And I had a little chat with her because you're all alone. You know, my method, you don't have to reach out to people and let them know what you're doing. Forgiveness in my world is selfish and personal. And it doesn't even matter if the person has passed away or not, because where they are or not doesn't matter at all. You're doing it for you. You're doing it because you're the prisoner. You want them out of your head. So I said what I wanted to say, and I imagined that she left the room, and then I forgave her using my mantra. And I felt better immediately. I felt like something had come off my shoulders, because there really is. You can feel a little bit of energy leaving if you pay attention. This is true. 2 hours later, she calls me on the phone. I almost fell off of my chair, and we said all the right things, made all the right noises, did all the right things, you know, blah, 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 you know, as people do. But I'm a very curious little bear. And I said, I have to know, after all these decades, why did you call me today of all days? And she said, you know, it's the damnedest thing. A figurine you gave me way back in school about 2 hours ago, which was exactly when I was saying my mantra, mind you, fell off my shelf and landed in the middle of my room. And I noticed it and thought I should give you a call. We were 700 miles away. So if the forgiveness energy has the potential of moving a figurine 700 miles away for a number one person, what do you think it's going to do for a higher level person? Now, another thing people say is anger is toxic. There was a Japanese researcher, and I'll make this fast. There's a Japanese researcher called Masumoto, and he studied water. And I'm going to dumb this down for everybody. He took two containers of water. He probably had more, but I'm just simplifying it. And one container, he spoke loving words, said loving things to it, you treated it nice. The other container, the complete opposite, nasty words, swore at it, told it was horrible. And he put it under a microscope. And the water that he said negative things to had these black and brown sludgy formations. You can Google it. They're really interesting pictures. And the water that he said love to had these beautiful formations and were gorgeous. Why am I telling you this? The human body is approximately 98% water. So when your self-talk is horrible and you're angry, what are you doing to your body? You're turning the cells into sludge. So forgiveness is going to turn that energy around. And that's, at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons you're going to start to feel better, because you're literally healing the cells of your body.
Thank you for that. I love the work that he did. It's utterly captivating and beautiful.
Isn't it?
To see the revelations that he brought forward are really extraordinary. And I just thought to myself, you know, we need those reminders. Mm-hmm.
And the pictures online are gorgeous. I mean, they're really, really interesting. Water. I mean, he kind of proved that water has a consciousness to it, which is mind blowing. That'll stretch your brain just that.
Yeah.
I really like that study a lot.
Yeah, me too. Me too. One of the things that I think, thank you for that story, because it is kind of bonkers. I suspect that you have lots of stories like that, just by virtue of who you are as a human being and how you interact with the world, how you converse with it. Sometimes I use that verb, how you converse with the world. I think one of the most difficult, and you can correct me if you think I'm wrong, one of the most difficult people to forgive is ourselves.
Yes. Absolutely. 100% spot on. Yourself is 100% the same thing. And if you're having trouble forgiving yourself, treat yourself as a number 10. Pick out whatever memory you're beating yourself up about and pick out other pieces of the memory, other objects. And I mean that, other objects, other people that didn't come to your aid, and forgive them first. I forgave 1974. Why did I forgive 1974? Parents got divorced. I was getting bullied. I was in the eighth grade, tried to commit suicide. So I did pick out all the people in that memory and I forgave them, but I also forgave the actual date too and the energy around the date.
And I think one of the most powerful, you know, forgivenesses we can do is when we were helpless and we couldn't stop what was happening around us. And you know, we self-recriminate because we didn't have any power, because we couldn't stop what was happening. And the loathing and the self-hatred that can come from that powerlessness is so insanely powerful that, you know, for me, that's a number 10 right there.
Sure.
How to forgive ourselves when we were completely vulnerable and, you know, just taken advantage of or wounded in a way that is insane. And we, I think a lot of people out in the world need to do that work with themselves, to forgive the little child that they were, the baby that they were, whatever they witnessed or experienced. And that, that is truly alchemical work. I mean, it all is. But that is,
remember, the person you were back then, the person I was in the eighth grade, the person I was when I was drinking, that person, I created that person to survive. There was a reason why I drank. There was a reason why all these things happened. And I created that person. I'm not that person today. So I can go back into those memories, as painful as it is, and forgive a lot of the pieces of it so I can neutralize the memory. I can also forgive myself for being that kid. I could forgive myself for being the kid I needed to be to survive. And when I forgive myself, it's almost like I'm forgiving a Catherine from another dimension. It's not, it's me from the past, but I treat that as I would any other number 10 person. And I forgive the Catherines in various parts of my life. And if I can't forgive that Catherine, well, then I'll pull out pieces of the memory that really helps, because it wasn't your fault. Mm-hmm. And for the women out there that are listening, men don't have this problem. I'm not sure why, but it's mostly women. And for the women listening, you are worthy. And we do believe you.
Thank you for that. I think, you know, speaking for myself, it's the work that I need to do now. And it is big work. And I have multiple people who are helping me through it, because you can do some of it alone. But it's also good to have for people to create containers that are safe to do that work in. And so I'm really blessed with, I found some really incredible people to share my stories with and to heal with. That's always, I think it takes a village, and I think it's good to like know it that it takes a village to do this work.
It does.
Yeah. So thank you for all of that. I just feel so sparkly after this conversation. It's incredible. And also I think that story of your friend and the figurine falling is kind of bonkers. I mean,
it's completely bonkers. Why would that happen? 700 miles and 2 hours. She chooses that day to call me up. I hadn't spoken to her in over 20 years. I mean, it's completely bonkers and completely nuts, yet it happened. Wow. There's a lot to the world that's absolutely bonkers. That's true. It's bonkers to be able to say, I forgave my childhood bed. What? I forgave my childhood school. That's even bonkers in itself. But if you're driving to work every day and you have to drive by your childhood grammar school, and every once in a while you turn to the left and you see it, and your memory pops into your head that you were bullied, you end up going to work and you're probably in a negative, bad mood because the memory is now in your head. Well, this is what I'm talking about. You want to neutralize that memory. So when you get to that red light, it doesn't bother you anymore. You'll still remember it, but there'll be no emotional charge. That's how you know you've absolutely 100% forgiven somebody, because you can look at their name or you can look at the place and you don't care. I'm looking for neutrality. That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to, you know, as a final question, ask you this question. Now, you have spoken about being clairaudient and the mm-hmm. other ways that you've opened up to, mm-hmm. You know, for what some people could be a very mysterious place or a mysterious kind of even conceiving of it is just mind blowing for them. When you were kind of coming into, I don't know, let's call them your gifts. When you're, was it scary? How did you navigate that?
It was scary, actually. I mean, it was comforting because I had Grandma Tori to say, you know, you're not crazy. I believe you along the way. But it was scary and I kind of buried it. And it wasn't until I think it was in the 1990s when we were living in a tiny, dark two-bedroom apartment. I've been married 34 years, got two sons, completely grown now, but they were 1 and 3 at the time. And I turned my head and I saw an angel standing there and then she was gone. And I'm thinking, I'm crazy. People don't see things like that. And she smiled at me and she was gone. There was no internet. There was no computers. Seriously, there may have been a floppy disk, maybe. And so I kind of thought about it and I thought, okay, well, maybe I should get some religion, like the Got Milk ads, you know, it's like, maybe I'll get religion, right? So I started saying, thank you, God, for things left and right. And I kept hearing you're welcome in my head. It didn't really register because I'd heard voices all my life. So I thought, well, it's just me saying you're welcome. I thought it was a little odd, but I wasn't connecting dots. So I finally thought, I'm a college educated girl, so I'm going to go to the bookstore and find a book. Somebody's written about this. So I'm walking around Barnes & Noble, and I managed to find myself in the metaphysical aisle, because of course I did. I don't know how I got over there. And this book, like the figurine, for the second time, levitated off the shelf and landed at my feet. And I'm thinking, okay. I walked around the other side to see who was over there, thinking they were cleaning or something. There was nobody there. So I walked back around. I looked down. And I saw it was Neil Donald Walsh's book of Conversations with God. And it finally occurred to me that it wasn't me talking to me. It was me talking to the other side. It's God. It's the angels. It's spirit guides. You can call it whatever you want. And it finally occurred to me what I had been doing all my life and why I could give advice the way I did. And I finally connected the dots. And I wasn't scared anymore because I've never been alone since. Once I embraced all of my intuitive gifts, I was never alone again. I could always tap into the angels and have a conversation. And I could always walk into a room and it felt off. Okay, if a room feels off to me, I leave. If a website feels off to me, I click off. I'm very sensitive to energy. And, you know, it's a question of paying attention. A few years back, we were going to relocate to Asheville. There was a hurricane that just went through there. And we were looking at a neighborhood and it felt wrong. And my husband's had a lot of knee operations, so moving to the mountains with his bad knees was probably not a good idea, but we really love the mountains. But it felt wrong, and I didn't know why. It felt off. So now we're just outside of Wilmington, and when the hurricane came through the other day, I almost lost it because I thought, oh, okay, well, clearly that's why we were not meant to go to Wilmington. So if the little bird on your shoulder says go right at the light and you always go left to get home, go right and take the long way. You're probably avoiding something horrific. The little bird has saved my life 3 times. If I hadn't listened to it, you and I would be talking because I would be dead. It's the reason why I found the cancer as quickly as I did. And it was stage 3 by the time I found it. But if I hadn't listened to the little bird on my shoulder who told me you need to take up running, okay, you're crazy. I'm allergic to exercise, was my whole life, but I couldn't get it out of my head. You got to run, you got to run, you got to run. So I took up running, went from a 14 down to an 8, and that's when I found the love through self-exam. Ladies, self-exams, please, saved my life. And the surgeon said, if I hadn't taken up running, I would be dead. And the reason I wasn't dead is because the little bird in my shoulder told me I needed to lose weight and I needed to run. Trust that little bird when you hear it.
that for a lot of people, this intuition thing is hogwash and nonsense.
Oh, sure.
They don't.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. But men call it their gut. Women call it their intuition. So if you're a man listening to this and you say, well, I trust my gut. Okay, that's fine. Semantics. I don't care what you call it. I just want you to trust it.
Yeah.
You can call it anything you like.
Yeah.
No, it's like, you know, Kirsten, it's like the law of gravity. The law of gravity is going to work no matter what I call it. I can call it the law of keeping Catherine on the planet. It doesn't care. It's still going to work. I don't believe in the law of gravity. I think it's hogwash. Okay. It doesn't care. It's still going to work. Your intuition doesn't care what you call it. It doesn't care if you don't believe in it. It's still going to work.
I'd love to share a story with you.
Please. It's really—
So I was in Portland and I went to the grocery store, and as I parked and got out of my car to go inside, this tow truck came in and was hooking up a car that obviously had, wasn't working. So they needed to tow it somewhere. And, you know, I was going about my business. And as I was walking past the driver who was hooking up the car, this voice came and said, that chain is going to break.
There you go.
What? I don't
love the little bird.
And I like ignored it. And I went inside. It was a quick errand. I was back out in like 10 minutes. And as I'm going to my car, the tow truck is going by me, and it goes up this kind of this hill to exit the parking lot. And all of a sudden I hear this wing, and I look over and the chain had broken. The car was rolling back down the hill towards an elderly lady who was just walking, and someone yelled, "Lady, watch out." And she just had just enough time to turn her head and dive out of the way of this car that then—
Oh, bless her heart.
Yeah, hit two more cars and crashed into the side of the market. I mean, it took out part of the wall.
Wow.
And, you know, I didn't even see the lady, but there were two young kids up on the top of the second story of the parking structure that had a complete view of everything that was happening. And so they were able to alert her, so she didn't get killed effectively. But I thought to myself, okay, so what just happened? And seriously, what just happened? And I think I need to start paying attention to this when it happens.
You're also clairaudient. You're like me. You hear the words, and it sounds just like your own voice in your own mind. But that's not something you would have said. The chain is going to break. That's not something you would think to yourself. And the chain broke, and you were being warned. These are things that 100% happened. Yeah, the little bird in your shoulder wanted you to pay attention to it.
I love that. Thank you so much, Catherine. You are a gift.
My pleasure.
You are my pleasure. Fun, and you're a great conversationalist. And this hour sped by, and I don't even know how that happened, but you're just utterly charming. I hope you know that.
Oh, thank you. I do enjoy turning people's lights on. The thing about being a flashlight for people, and everybody say, oh, it's great, you're such a light. It's like, yeah, but think about it. Flashlights have to go into dark places. So yeah, good for you, bad for me. Thank you very much. No, I'm kidding. Doesn't bother me. But yeah, I like to leave people better than I find them. It really is a family mantra of ours over here. So.
And your wicked sense of humor.
My sense of humor is a little dark. When you've been through as much stuff as I have and cancer, the way we get through it is we laugh. My husband and I are notorious for going into a chemotherapy and making everybody laugh because... Why not? It's so much more fun to laugh your way through life than anything else.
That's a wrap on this episode of the podcast. I hope you thoroughly enjoyed meeting Catherine, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation. I'm all about introducing all my listeners to new and fresh and fun human beings who are urging us all to make our lives a little brighter, a little shinier, through whatever kind of advice they have to give. And it really resonated with me this week. Catherine's forgiveness advice. I have a really hard time forgiving myself, and that's where I need to start. You know, yes, there are people in the outer world I need to forgive, but there's so much that I've gone through in my life, and I know this, that I don't forgive myself for, and I really, really need to start working on that. To find out a little bit more about Catherine and her incredible work, there will be a link in the episode's show notes. Please do jump in and do a deeper dive on yet another human being who's making this world a better place. Thank you again to each of you who listens to this podcast. And if you haven't yet, please do consider leaving a rating or writing a little review. I know I say this every single time, but those ratings and reviews help other people find us. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Catherine. Forgive yourself. Forgive others. Forgive the bird who just maybe went to the bathroom on your car. Forgive the world for being what it is right now. I mean, I do think that the power of forgiveness can unlock such big, beautiful things for us. It is a challenging practice. It is a hard practice, but forgiveness is incredibly powerful. So be like Catherine and work on it. Practice it. Practice your forgiveness. And I think pretty soon you'll find out, I mean, you'll maybe think about that load that you've been carrying, that weight that's been on your shoulders. And forgiveness by forgiveness, I think you'll find that that load that you've been carrying, well, it gets lighter every day. See you next time for the very next episode of the podcast. And until then, dance like no one's watching, laugh as loudly as you can, and have conversations with strangers who ultimately become your friends.